pass cranked into center field. Phillips is on the run. He dives and he caught it. Oh, man. Brett Phillips might have made the catch of the year.
And that was the highlight for the Royals last night. Ned Yost talks about that great catch for Brett Phillips for the boys in blue.
That was probably the best one. I didn't think. I thought, what stars? How many stars? I know you know.
There's only three.
Oh, that's no way.
No, just because his route wasn't great. He got a good jump. But
I don't know, man. I didn't think.
The other one was actually better. It was four stars, the one he
had. I thought that he had no chance of catching that ball. None. Zero. I mean, not even 8%. And I was shocked when he caught it. I couldn't believe it. That one was a great catch. I don't believe in that either.
It's science.
Okay, no, I see. That's why I need to go home.
He doesn't believe in science. Brett Phillips with a great catch. Couple of good catches last night. Royals bullpen, though, was really bad, and that's one of the problems for the Royals they have to address in the offseason. Royals have the second worst bullpen ERA in the American League. Only worse, the Baltimore Orioles. The ERA of the bullpen for the Royals, 5.04. That will far from what they used to have when they won the World Series in 2015. And Royals lose 10-2 last night, so they'll finish out the string. Three games against the Minnesota Twins, who clinched the American League Central last night. So the Royals will start that series coming up here. That will be today. Actually, it'll be tomorrow, Friday. They have Thursday off, and they have three games left. Eric Skoglund on the Hill coming up on Friday, and then Saturday it will be Glenn Sparkman. And on Sunday, Jorge Lopez. The Twins have not determined who their starters are going to be because they clinched the Central, so they're probably sitting there going, we'll just throw about a whole bunch of stiffs out there. We don't care because it doesn't matter anymore, and they can't get home field advantage in the American League either. So we'll talk more about baseball playoffs and how that's working. A former Royal last night nearly had a no-hitter. We'll tell you who that is as well. Plus, more on Ned Yost, some interesting information from Curtis Seabolt, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, to just add more facts to the argument Ned Yost was clearly the best manager in Royals history. And it's funny because I talked to somebody the other day and they said, you know, Wade, you can't explain logic to people that don't want to understand logic. And I'm like, you're right. And he goes, you can't give people facts when they don't acknowledge facts. That's a sign of insanity when you try to convince people that don't want to see the big picture. I'm like, it's true. That is true. It is probably a waste of time. But I will defend Ned Yost after ripping him a few times in his career as Royals manager. And just because I did that does not mean he's not a good manager or a great manager, and so forth and so on. So we got some interesting information about the Royals with Ned Yost compared to other Major League Baseball teams that went the back-to-back World Series, which there's not a lot of managers that can brag about that, by the way. But Ned Yost is one of them. So, but he's a dunce. He's an idiot. What did he know about baseball? He just, yeah, he could have put Big Bird in the dugout. Royals wouldn't have won a World Series in 2015. He didn't need no manager.
No, not
yeah,
at all.
Not at all. Yeah, the players did it all on their own. Manager had nothing to do with it. So, anyway. All right, local sports information, Dusty.
Yeah, we'll start, first with the newest Kansas Volleyball Association rankings that came out yesterday, as Beloit's still number 2 in Class 3A in those rankings, and TMP Marion from the MCL number 9. Royal Valley checks in at number 1 again this week, and 2A Waubunsee still number 1, Smith Center still number 2, and Trigo still number 9 from the MCL. And Class 1A, some changes for our area teams. Spearville's number 1 in 1A. Thunder Ridge moves up to number 5, and St. John's Tipton has moved down to number 9. So that's a look at the KVA rankings there from yesterday's newest release here after 3 weeks of volleyball here in the state. So, again, if you want the full rankings, you can find them at ncksports.com. Also, a quick look at today's schedule, and then we'll go over the classifications that were released yesterday by Keisha. And high school volleyball today, Wilson Triangular, St. John's Tipton, Wilson and Russell competing there. National start at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Wilson. And then cross country at 4 o'clock at Republic County, Beloit, St. John, Southern Cloud, Pike Valley, and Smith Center from the area competing there. And the Hill City Invitational, Lakeside and Osborne are competing there at 5 o'clock here this afternoon. And then girls tennis, Beloit's at the Concordia Invitational at 1, and Osborne girls tennis is at the Russell Invitational at 1 o'clock. So, again, that's a look at the schedule for today. Again, all schedules also for your favorite varsity teams are at ncksports.com. As we mentioned yesterday, the newest classifications came out. The Kansas State High School Activities Association. I'll start first with the area schools, and then we'll kind of dive into some of the changes. I know there's some interesting things that are going on here with some of the different changes, especially more so geared toward football. But there's no in the general classifications, which are all sports and activities other than football. There are no changes in the immediate area, but it's still 3A, Smith Center, 2A, St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Osborne, Rock Hills, Thunder Ridge, Sylvan Lucas, Lincoln, Southern Cloud, and Pike Valley, all in our area, are the 1A teams. So, again, no changes there in those general classifications. The new football classifications, which will begin in 2020-21, that's a two-year cycle that starts next school year with football, and there's just one change, and it's a change that we had heard might be coming, and it definitely does come. But it moves down to Class 2A in the football classifications. Again, that starts next year. Everything that's still in place this year is still in place. So next year, the 2021 2020 and 2021 football cycle again, Beloit now 2A. Everybody else does stay where they were previously in our area. Smith Center 1A, Lincoln's 8-man Division 1, and the rest of our area teams, St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Osborne, Rock Hills, Thunder Ridge, Sylvan Lucas, Southern Cloud, and Pike Valley are all in 8-man Division 2 in football. So that's a look at the local schools and where everybody's at as far as the classifications are concerned. The newest ones and full classifications again are at ncksports.com as well.
Well, I'm okay with not going to the Mountain Time Zone to cover a football game in the future, so I'm good with the change, Beloit going to 2A.
Because the rest of them are in 8-man, other than the ones that are in that 3A that you're covering.
Right. Beloit, they might get paired up with like a Phillipsburg or a Norton, Minneapolis, Republic County possibly, in their new districts. We'll get that figured out down the line, or the Acacia will. Beloit going to 2A. Beloit was a solid 2A, by the way. They wasn't even really that close. 168 was the cutoff for 3A to 2A. Beloit had 150 for their enrollment. If you don't know how it works, they take the three classes, freshman, sophomore, and junior, add them up, and that's how they do it. It's different for the other sports. We'll get to that in a moment. I think, interesting, when you look at, for instance, Great Bend is going from 5A to 4A in football. Goddard goes from 4A to 5A. Hutch goes from 6A to 5A. And Pittsburgh goes from 4A to 5A. Council Grove goes from 2A to 3A. Southeast Saline goes from 2A to 3A. I thought there's a possibility maybe Southeast Saline would be in a Beloit district, but Southeast barely. By three students, they're 3A. So they're at the bottom of 3A. Riley County back to 3A from 2A in football. Ellis goes from 1A to 2A. Hillsborough was 1A. They go back to 2A. And Pittsburgh Colgan was 1A, now they're 2A. So, as I mentioned, Public County is now 2A, and Beloit, of course, drops to 2A. That's interesting. The one that jumped out to me of all of these, regardless if it's from the area, is Conway Springs going from 2A to 1A. That jumped out like a sore thumb. And by the way, the number of schools in regards to the classifications in football, 6A, 5A, 4A, 32 schools. So you're one of 32. You have a 1 in 32 chance of being state champs. In Class 3A and 2A, there's 48. So you have a 1 in 48 chance of being state champs. Class 1A is the easiest of all the classes. 1 out of 28. Yeah. And here's the thing. Of the 28 1A schools for football, 19 of those 28 had enrollments under 100 and could have chosen to play 8-man football this year, like Centralia, like Olpe. Now, some were under 100. They decided to stay 11-man. Some chose to go back to 8-man, like, wasn't it? When Yates Center was one of those. So
lacrosse and Meade are the other two that decided to go to 8-man.
Yeah, that's right. So lacrosse going to 8-man, which is interesting too. They've had a lot of success. Meade, of course, they both had success in 11-man. Of course, showdowns with Smith Center over the years. 8-man Division II in football. Central Plains, South Central, Lebo, St. Francis, Victoria dropped a D2 from D1. Ooh, D2's rough. Holy cow.
Yeah.
There's some juggernauts right there going from 1 to 2. But anyway, you have a 1 in 48 chance of winning 8-man Division 1, a 1 in 52 chance, because there's 52 schools in 8-man Division 2. By far the easiest is 1A. You're just one of 28 schools, and 19 of those 28 have enrollments under 100 and could have gone 8-man. Why again did Acacia break it up into a whole bunch of classifications? It blows my mind, and I don't even want to go down the road. Listen. It's the opposite. Acacia is doing the opposite of what they should be doing, or the member schools are the opposite of what they should be doing in regards to splitting all the classifications. Football, to me, it should be 2-1A together like it used to be.
2-1A together like it used to be. And if that means, God forbid, there's 76 schools, or you want to restructure a little bit from the top to the bottom, fine, from 6A to 1A. But 28 schools, that's it? You know, I mean, everybody else has, 3A, 2A, 48, 8-man, 48, 52, 4, 5, and 6A have 32. So 1A is closer to that. So 1A could say, well, what are you talking about? 6, 5A, and 4A, there's only four more schools in those classes. Yeah, their enrollments are much higher. So there's much more players you can pull from out of the pool to have really good football teams. Whereas 1A, you have 19 of the 28 with enrollments under 100. I don't know. It's just, I don't think you needed it. You don't. You could have two. I mean, come on. You know Smith Center can compete 2-1A. We know that. They just beat a Phillipsburg in 2A, for crying out loud. And now I know there's some 1As that might not be competing as well with 2As, but to have 28 sitting there in 11-man football in 1A sticks out like a sore thumb. And it's not just me or you. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah. And football's so much tougher because you just don't know how many of those all those schools are 1A schools after 2A. So it's hard to judge going in how many you think are going to be playing 8-man and how many are going to be playing 11-man.
But if you combine 2-1A together, it'd be a little easier.
And then you're getting a fairly high number there in one class of like almost 90.
But don't you think if you went 2-1A together, perhaps there'd be a few teams in 1A saying we would go 8-man?
We'll play 8-man, yeah.
And now you wouldn't have 76 schools combined between 1A and 2A, because that's what it's combined right now. 2A is 48, 1A is 28.
Yeah.
So you might have 10 schools going to 8-man. Okay. So 10 schools go to 8-man. So 8-man 1 now has 56, and 8-man 2 has 54. You know what I'm saying? For an even number. And 1A, 2A has 66. It's not a major difference.
Yeah.
Just saying. Anyway, I'm not in charge.
I'm just saying that's the tough part of it.
Everything's tough. Everything's tough.
I think there's ways around it on the general classifications part more than there is on football, because they want to have, because of the general classifications, you have 64 in 3A and 2A, and now it's 48 in 3A and 2A, and it's 36 in 6-5A, 4A, it's 32 in football.
Right.
So the numbers are even different. It's harder to gauge how you take care of that problem, I guess.
To me, you go 2-1A has 64.
Yeah.
2-1A has 64, and you got 12 team schools that, you know, you encourage them to play 8-man. I don't know how you do it. It's just too few. 28.
Well, and I don't disagree with that at all.
Too few. It's just, obviously 1A is the easiest one to win now. And that's not a knock on Smith Center, because I've said before, they can, you know, they just beat number 2 in 2A Phillipsburg. So you know Smith Center can, 2-1A, they won titles. 3A, they won titles. They're by themselves in 1A, it's even easier they win titles. I mean, they could win them. They've proven they can win them in any classification from that standpoint. But 1A is, you know, Conway Springs dropping makes that a little more difficult, no question. But at the same time, Colgan went to 2A. So there's kind of a switch there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's football. The biggest noteworthy one locally is Beloit going to 2A. The general classifications, what we mean by general classifications is all the other sports. That's the best way to say it. All the other sports, which they take enrollment figures based on 9th, 10th, and 11th grades only. And that's as of September 20th, the enrollment figures. Excuse me, I'm looking at the wrong thing. That's football.
It's like general classifications.
Yeah, my bad.
All four.
My bad. Yep. I know. I've got a lot of sheets of paper in front of me, so bear with me. So, yes, that's how football's figured, 9th, 10th, and 11th grades only. Then the general is figured on all four grades, 9, 10, 11, and 12, as of September the 20th. And there's really nobody that's making any major moves in our area at all.
No. Hill City's up to 2A is about the only thing that has any effect with, mm-hmm. Because, you know, some of our teams did go to Hill City for regional basketball last year.
Right.
But other than that, that's pretty much it.
Ness City goes from 2A to 1A. Belle Plaine has made state basketball in 3A. They go to 2A. Erie goes from 3A to 2A. And 3A, you know, Beloit people might be interested in this. Lakin goes from 2A to 3A. Humboldt goes from 2A to 3A. Effingham goes from 2A to 3A. Wichita Trinity Academy and Osawatomie and Garnett, Anderson County go from 4A to 3A. The one that Beloit fans are going to be interested in, Gerard, who beat Beloit in the state championship in basketball, goes back up to 4A. Beloit's probably going, I've been nice a year sooner. But Clay Center goes from 3A to 4A, and Holton back to 4A. I never thought Holton was a 3A school, but they're back to where they probably should be, in my opinion, 4A. But it's all based on enrollment. So
yeah.
I get all that. All that's posted at nckasports.com. Anything else you want to add about that?
No, I think we covered most of the big points there.
I killed a few trees when I printed all that information out. That's
same.
For sure. Holy schnikes. All right, Major League Baseball, the playoffs we'll get to in a moment. You know, we talk a lot about KU and K-State, and we talk about Big 12, and we talk about Nebraska and so forth and so on when it comes to college football. We talk about the MIAA. But did you know the showdown that's going to happen at Hutchinson this Saturday?
Yes.
Number one in the country in junior college football, Hutchinson, is hosting number two in the country, Butler. It's 1 versus 2, not in the league, not in the conference, not in the state. We're talking in the nation. Number one, Hutch, hosting number two, Butler, this Saturday in Hutch at noon. That's pretty doggone cool, and it tells you how good junior college football is in the state of Kansas. No question about it. Guard City also ranked in the top 15. All right, on the baseball, where Zach Greinke, former Royal, had a chance at a no-hitter last night.
Curveball set in the air to left center field. Jake coming on, can't get there. That's a base hit for Noah. Two outs away from a no-hitter, and Greinke gives up a single to Noah in the ninth.
In the Astros rotation, Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander on the same team, and they are going to be the two fighting for the Cy Young Award. And Greinke almost threw a no-hitter last night. Of course, Greinke says it's a bunch of nonsense and a waste of time when talking about no-hitters. It's just a hassle. He almost had a whole bunch of hassle last night, but he avoided it. He, you know, knowing Greinke, threw one fat over the plate and allowed the guy to get a hit. I mean, that just, Greinke's a different dude, man. And I like him because of it, yeah. To be quite honest with you. So he his no-hit bid is broken up. He had two outs to go to possibly get it, and he didn't get it. But don't feel bad for the Astros, because the Astros have won 104 games. And when you look at the standings, the Astros, right now it's an interesting race here in the final three games of the season to figure out who is going to be the home field advantage. Who's going to have home field advantage? Because the Yankees have a lot of wins. Yankees have 102. The Astros 104. It does look like the Astros are going to get home field advantage in the American League playoffs. But the other factor in this whole thing, the Dodgers, they have 102 wins. And remember, All-Star Game does not have anything to do with home field advantage in the World Series anymore. Mm-hmm. So it is all based on your record, like it should be. And the Yankees right now have 102. The Astros have 104. The Dodgers 102. But it looks like Houston will have home field advantage throughout the playoffs and the World Series if they get that far. So you have three 100-win teams. You have four 100-loss teams for the first time in Major League Baseball history. And the division titles, Yankees are wrapped theirs up. The Twins wrapped up the Central last night, which is a pretty cool story. I like small market doing well. They have 98 wins. The Astros, it's possible that every division winner in American League will have 100 wins.
Yeah.
That also tells you how bad some of the teams are in the league, so they can add to their win total. The Tigers have 111 losses. The Royals, 101. The Baltimore Orioles have 107. Three of the four 100-loss teams are in American League. No wonder there's three 100-win teams.
Yes.
And some believe these teams are tanking. You remember the Seattle Mariners started a year 11-2?
Yeah.
They're 66-92. So it's not how you start, it's how you finish. No. The Braves won the East. The Cardinals have, well, the Cardinals haven't wrapped up the Central yet. The Dodgers have wrapped up the West a long time ago. So when you look at the standings and the wild card situation right now, the American League has been tight for a while. The Indians might be on the outside looking in. Tampa Bay is a half game behind Oakland for the home field in the AL wild card. Cleveland's a game and a half back of Tampa Bay. Cleveland might not make the playoffs and win 96 games. Well, we better open up the wild card a little bigger. Let's add some more teams. Well, the next highest win total is Boston, 83. And if you go any further, Texas is eight games under 500. It just depends on the year.
Yeah.
In the National League, the Cubs have been eliminated. The Mets have been eliminated. So Milwaukee and Washington are the wild card teams, although Milwaukee can still catch the Cardinals and win the division. And the Cardinals have to play the Cubs. So the Cubs are playing spoiler in the final series. And Milwaukee's at Cincinnati, and the Reds haven't been super great this year. So there's a chance Milwaukee can flip with the Cardinals. But as of now, Milwaukee would be at the Nationals for the wild card. And isn't it ironic how things work out? Bryce Harper, superstar player, leaves the Nationals to go to the Phillies. And then who eliminated the Phillies just the other day? The Washington Nationals. The Nationals maybe are better without Bryce Harper. I've said this for years. You don't take and spend tons of money, hundreds of millions of dollars on all these players. Mike Trout might be an exception, but where has that got the Angels?
The Angels have not done anything since the Royals played them in the playoffs, have they?
Nope.
Like, worth anything.
Manny Machado, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and I'm forgetting the fourth one, that making over like $300 million a year. All four of those guys, not $300 million a year, but $300 million contracts.
Yeah.
All of those guys, their teams are not in the playoffs. They're not in the playoffs. And I think when you put so much money towards one player, especially in baseball, and in football you should only do it for one position, that's quarterback. But you do it in baseball, it hurts you to fill other needs that you have on your team. That's why you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And the Nationals, I think it'd be hilarious if the Nationals won the World Series without Bryce Harper. Because they always get there, funny, and then yeah. they disappoint. I think that'd be hilarious. Okay, we're talking about, by the way, Adalberto Mondesi going to have shoulder surgery out 5 to 6 months, but should be ready for opening day next year. So the timing of a shoulder injury, really actually pretty good for the Royals, for him to rehab and have the surgery and get back on the field come opening day in April of 2020. So how did Ned Yost do more with less in 2014 and 15? Amazing information here from Curtis Siebold, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. The Baltimore Orioles, the Oakland A's, the Cincinnati Reds, the New York Yankees, the A's again from 88 to 90, Toronto Blue Jays, Atlanta Braves, New York Yankees, who did it, 4 years in a row, and then the Phillies. All those teams I just mentioned went to back-to-back World Series or went to 3 World Series in a row or 2 World Series in a row. The Royals did that as well. What's really interesting is the Baltimore Orioles, from 1969 to 71, went to the World Series. They had 3 Hall of Fame players, and they had 5 Cy Young winners or MVPs on their roster. The Oakland A's, 72 to 74, had 3 Hall of Famers and 4 Cy Young MVP winners on their roster. 75-76, Cincinnati Reds had 4 Hall of Famers and 4 Cy Young MVP winners. 76 to 78, the Yankees had Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter as 2 Hall of Famers, and they had 5 Cy Young Award winner MVP winners on their roster. 1988 to 1990, the Oakland A's had 4 Hall of Famers and 4 Cy Young MVP winners. Toronto Blue Jays, 1992 to 93, had 5 Hall of Famers and 3 Cy Young MVP winners. The Atlanta Braves, 95-96, had 4 Hall of Famers, 5 Cy Young MVP winners. 1998 to 2001, the Yankees went 4 straight years, had 5 Hall of Famers, and 4 Cy Young Award winner or MVP winners. And most recently, before the Royals, Philadelphia Phillies, they had 1 Hall of Famer, and they had 4 Cy Young or MVP winners on their roster. The Kansas City Royals, 2014-15, under the dunce named Ned Yost, the dunce, the idiot, according to some. How many Hall of Famers did he have? 0. How many Cy Young winners, MVP winners did he have? 0. Now, you got to let it play out. How many guys on that team from 14 or 15 will be Hall of Famers? The answer, probably 0. Maybe Salvi Perez. Maybe. Maybe if he bounces back and gets healthy. No Cy Young winners. No MVP winners. Nobody even in the top 3 of MVP voting those 2 years. Nobody running for the Cy Young Award that year. The Royals weren't winning any individual awards other than Gold Gloves because they played defense. Help me again on how Ned isn't the best manager in Royals history. I mean, for crying out loud, Dick Houser had George Brett, Hall of Famer.
Yes.
He had Brett Saberhagen, Cy Young Award winner.
Yes.
He wasn't at that time, but he was shortly after that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we go back, you know, Whitey Herzog had George Brett.
Yeah.
And there's a few others, by the way, that were along those lines. So, anyway, it is interesting what Ned Yost did. When you look at that information that Curtis Siebel put together, it adds to the argument. Okay, before we get Brian Haney on with us, this is interesting news, I think. Ex-Lions NFL star Calvin Johnson, who was an outstanding wide receiver, retired at the age of 30. He reveals that he used to break one particular NFL rule after every game. You have any idea what that rule might have been, Dusty?
I haven't heard the stories. No, I don't.
He spent 9 seasons in the NFL, and although he was never suspended during his career, he definitely could have been, and that's because he used to break one certain NFL rule after every game. During a recent interview with Sports Illustrated, Megatron revealed that he smoked marijuana after nearly every game he played from 2007 until his retirement in 2015. According to Johnson, he used the drug to help ease the physical pain that he would feel after each game. He also used it because he was alarmed by the rampant opioid abuse that he saw going on in the NFL. He said, when I got to the league, there was all kinds of opioid abuse. You really could go in the training room and get whatever you wanted. Vicodin, I could get Oxycontin. It was available. Percocet and stuff like that. And I didn't like the way that made me feel. I had my preferred choice of medicine. That was cannabis. The reason Johnson was smoking for medicinal purposes, if I could talk, so often during his NFL career is because he was always in serious pain. He had all kinds of ankle injuries, multiple ankle injuries. He also had multiple concussions. And here's the interesting part of the story to me, besides the fact that he smoked marijuana and was never tested for his whole career. According to Megatron, he suffered at least 9 head injuries in his NFL career. He was never listed on the Lions injury report with a concussion. In 2012, he went public and said he had a concussion after a game. The Lions came to him and said, "No, you didn't." So Johnson said, okay. He was pressured to say he didn't have a concussion. He says, now I changed my story because the Lions forced me to. He said, I had a concussion. He said, there were multiple times where my head hit the turf and I saw stars and I couldn't see straight. And after a couple minutes, I was fine and I played through that plenty of times before. He believes he's had 9 head injuries, if not 9 concussions, in his NFL career. And not one was diagnosed by NFL training staff or the NFL Detroit Lions organization. Yikes. And you wonder why players retire early and then the fans get all mad and yelling and screaming. Andrew Luck, what are you doing, Andrew Luck? This is why. Yeah. Because in order to get on the field, they become addicted to painkillers. See Brett Favre and many other athletes, by the way. You get addicted to stuff. Or there's pressure to win. There's pressure to be successful. There's pressure for you to be on the field, especially you're making lots of money. So then you got to go the cannabis route if you want to go. And then you can be drug tested. Then you get suspended and everybody thinks you're a druggie, which that's not accurate either. And then you retire early, and how dare you retire early as your body's breaking down? You get paid well for it, but is it really worth it in the long run? Some of these players will tell you it's not. Coming up,
Johnson will definitely tell you it's not.
That's right. And good for him, he retired at the age of 30. And good for Barry Sanders, Robert Smith, and others retired early, Andrew Luck. Do what's best for you and your family, and I commend them for leaving the game a little bit early. So much for this stuff. You got to be a tough guy, play football. Yeah, so your brains are beaten in where you can't even talk and you're in a wheelchair when you're 45? That doesn't sound like a good future to me.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.